Good to see everyone this evening. We'll be looking at Psalm 9. The Lord is the judge of the world. The Lord judges the world. In verse 8, and he will judge the world in righteousness. And so the theme of Psalm 9 deals with the Lord judging various ones in his world. Let's read together Psalm 9. Beginning in verse 1. I will give thanks unto Jehovah with my whole heart. I will show forth all thy marvelous works. I will be glad and exult in thee. I will sing praise to thy name, O thou most high. When mine enemies turn back, they stumble and perish at thy presence. For thou hast maintained my right and my cause. Thou sittest in the throne, judging righteously. Thou hast rebuked the nations. Thou hast destroyed the wicked. Thou hast blotted out their name forever and ever. The enemy are come to an end. They are desolate forever. And the cities which thou hast overthrown, the very remembrance of them is perished. But Jehovah sitteth as king forever. He hath prepared his throne for judgment, and he will judge the world in righteousness. He will minister judgment to the peoples in uprightness. Jehovah also will be a high tower for the oppressed, a high tower in times of trouble. And they that know thy name will put their trust in thee. For thou, Jehovah, hast not forsaken them that seek thee. Sing praises to Jehovah, who dwelleth in Zion. Declare among the people his doings. For he that maketh inquisition for blood remembereth them, and forgetteth not the cry of the poor. Have mercy upon me, O Jehovah. Behold my affliction which I suffer of them that hate me, thou that liftest me up from the gates of death, that I may show forth all thy praise in the gates of the daughter of Zion. I will rejoice in thy salvation. The nations are sunk down in the pit that they made. In the pit which they hid is their own foot taken. Jehovah hath made himself known. He hath executed judgment. The wicked is snared in the work of his own hands. The wicked shall be turned back unto Sheol, even all the nations that forget God. For the needy shall not always be forgotten, nor the expectation of the poor perish forever. Arise, O Jehovah, let not man prevail. Let the nations be judged in thy sight. Put them in fear, O Jehovah. Let the nations know themselves to be but men. This evening, we want to look at Psalm 9 and the various judgments that the Lord makes upon mankind, upon the psalmist himself, upon his enemies, upon the poor and the oppressed. And so it's a great psalm reminding us of how that God is judge. And when we are surrounded by bad times, you turn on the news, whether it's the Middle East or somewhere else, Russia, Middle East, whatever, a lot of bad things going on, turbulent times, troubled times, the Lord is judge over all. And we need to remember that. And so we look forward to our study of this psalm this evening. A couple of matters by way of introduction. Notice in the title of the psalm, we're introduced to some other notations here. For the chief musician, set to Muth-Laban, a psalm of David. Muth-Laban probably means something along the lines of the death of the son. Ben is son, Laban in Hebrew, the son. Muth, death or die. So it may have been a title of a song. It may have been the name of an instrument. Some of these musical notations, we just don't know the precise or exact meaning. But those at that time would have known what that meant, and they would have set the psalm to that either instrument or title of a song. This psalm centers and focuses on the judgment of God. Verses 1 through 4, the psalmist is basically saying, "Judge me." Notice verse 4, "Thou hast maintained my right and my cause." You're going to come to my aid. You're going to judge me and vindicate me. Verses 5 through 8, "Lord, judge the nations." And he may have in mind particularly those wicked and adversaries that he has. Keep in mind that David is a king. Before he became king was he running from Saul and Absalom, but after he became king, there were those who didn't like him. There were those who didn't like Israel, surrounding nations, Moab, Ammon, Philistia, whatever the case might be. And so, judge the nations. Verses 13 through 16, he combines two previous thoughts, judge me and the nations. Verses 9 through 12, judge the poor, come to their aid. The poor, the afflicted, the helpless, they are often oppressed. Please help them, be a high tower. This is a stone tower that goes up. It's a fortress. It's a tower of defense, like on a castle. And so, come to their aid, those that trust in thee, you see. Again, in verse 18, the needy shall not be forgotten. The Lord's going to care for them, judge them, vindicate them. And then verses 17 through 20, he comes back to the thought of judge the poor and the nations. And so really the idea of judgment runs all throughout this psalm. And so the Lord judges the world, Psalm 9, verse 8. Now, tonight we're introduced to the first of something that shows up in the Psalms, and that is that Psalm 9 and 10 are what are called acrostic or alphabetic Psalms. You'll see the in the notes there under verse 1. What is happening here is that in the Hebrew, and I'm going to show you the script in just a moment from Psalm 9, the beginning of the sentence, the first word of the sentence, and the first letter of that word starts with the Hebrew alphabet and goes from the beginning to the end. The Hebrews had 22 letters in their alphabet. And they don't match up. Some of them might match up with our letter A or B, something along that. But then they had some different letters that don't match up with what we have in English. But they had 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet. And they would take the first word of the beginning of the line, and the first letter of that word would be like letter A. And then maybe the next line, that first letter of that first word would be B, and so forth on down through the alphabet. And there were basically two things that were done with that. First of all, if you had an alphabetic psalm, you could help memorize it. In fact, teachers will do this today. They will have writing exercises with their kids where, and I'm going to show you an example in English, where they'll say, write some poetry, and the first word needs to be an A word, and then the next line, it needs to be a B word, and there's exercises all over the internet for that. We do that in English. Well, the Hebrews did that. The first reason was, it was helpful for memorization because you could memorize that A, B, C, D, E, you know, word, and it kind of helps you remember the rest of the line. And then there has been some discussion that Hebrew parents would use it to teach their children just the Hebrew alphabet. But most likely for adults and things like that, it would be you could memorize the psalm better. So Psalm 9 and 10 are the first of what's called acrostic or alphabetic psalms. Now, there are a few of these in the Psalms. 9, 10, 25, 34, 37, 111, 112, 119, and 145. And the first letter of the Hebrew alphabet is Aleph or A, and the last letter of the Hebrew alphabet is Tau, which is similar to our T. And notice up here in Psalm 9, the letters Aleph through Kaf are used, and then Psalm 10 picks up with Lamed and goes to Tau. And so you end up, if you put both of the Psalms together, you get the Hebrew alphabet. Some people believe that Psalm 9 and 10 were originally together as one. Notice in your Bible that Psalm 10 does not have a title under it. Psalm 9 does, but Psalm 10 doesn't. That's one indication that they originally may have been together. In the Septuagint, they're just considered one. That's why in the Septuagint, the numbering of the Psalms is off by one until later on they catch up in a way because they divide some of the Psalms differently. But at this point, they're one behind the Hebrew Bible because they actually combine 9 and 10. And one reason for thinking that is that when you put both of them together, you get the letters of the Hebrew alphabet. Now, it's not a perfect rendition. Sometimes a letter might be left out or it might be repeated, but it's the idea of having that first letter of the first word of the line, you know, in succession there for memorization purposes. Now, here's an example in English. This was a poem just called World War II. Air raid shelters damp and black, bombs exploding back to back, children crying, adults too, down the cellar after you. You can see A, B, C, D, and so forth. Okay, and the poem goes on and it just goes down through the letters of the alphabet. What you're seeing in English is the same thing that was done in Hebrew. Okay, so it just goes down through. Now, this is the way it is in the Hebrew text, the Masoretic text. Now, the Hebrews read from right to left. So here's the beginning of the sentence. Here's Aleph. Look, and there's that A, okay, and then Beth. It skips a line. Gimel, okay, and the next letter in the Hebrew alphabet is supposed to be Daleth, but it's skipped. It goes to He, Vav, okay, and the first letters are going to be those letters in the alphabet. Vav, Zion, Heth, Teth, Yod, Kaf. And it stops right there, about halfway through the Hebrew alphabet. Okay, and then Psalm 10 picks up verse 1 with Lamed, and it just goes on to Tau. So this is called an acrostic. Now, this means nothing to us because we're reading it in English and we don't see any of this. But you need to know that the Hebrews had at least, you saw the chart earlier, there were several there where it was purposefully that way. Turn with me to Psalm 19. This is probably one of the more familiar ones. And those of you who have Bibles that let you know that this is an acrostic psalm, Psalm 119. Raise your hand if you have a Bible where the first 8 verses it says Aleph, the second 8 verses it says Beth. Does anybody have a Bible like that on Psalm 19? Anna's does. Psalm 119. Psalm 119 is an example, and it goes through all 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet. Psalm 119, if you were looking at it in the Hebrew, the first 8 verses, every beginning word would start with Aleph. 9 through 16, every beginning word would start with Beth, Gimel, Daleth, Hey, Vav, Zion, Heth, and so forth, all the way down through. Every beginning word of 8 verses, then the next block of 8, then the next block of 8. It's a memory system for the Hebrews. And so they could memorize all of Psalm 119 because they know that the 8 verses is going to begin with A. The next 8 verses is going to begin with B. And it's really neat how they did that. So anyway, this is known as an acrostic psalm. And I just wanted to make you aware of that. Okay, so let's begin by answering some of our questions now. And if you look at Psalm 9 and Psalm 10 together, you can also see that the material is similar. There is wicked people who are out to get the psalmist. And so Psalm 9 and 10 may have originally gone together. Okay, Sherry, we'll start with you this evening. Number one, what 4 things does the psalmist promise to do regarding the Lord?
I will praise you, I will tell of your marvelous works, I will be glad and rejoice in you, and I will sing praise to you.
Okay, notice the 4 I wills there. Notice the resolve, notice the promise, notice the commitment. We need that in our lives today. In the midst of a tumultuous time, he's going to remain faithful to the Lord. Eric, number 2, what happens to the psalmist's enemies? Okay, and we know that that's going to happen because the theme is that of God judging. And so when God judges them, whether it's in this life or ultimately in the next, they are going to turn back, stumble, perish. They're not going to ultimately be successful. Okay, Joyce number three, what has the Lord done for the psalmist himself?
Maintained his right and his cause.
Thou sittest in the throne judging righteously. And so you're going to maintain my cause. You're going to vindicate me. He's not saying, well, just go judge everybody else, but don't judge me. No, judge me. And when you do, I will be exonerated and vindicated. You will see how these people are persecuting me, how that I'm putting my faith in you, and I will be shown to be right. So verse 4, judging, applying to himself. Verse 8, judging the world, and then, you know, judging the poor, you know, judging the nations. That really does become the theme of all of this psalm. Okay, Mike, number 4, what has the Lord done to the nations, the wicked, and the enemies? Okay. They're come to an end. They're desolate. They're destroyed. And so they look like they're winning. They look like they're overcoming. They look like they're getting the upper hand. But ultimately, God judges them and brings them to an end. Okay? And it's all because of God's judgment. And we need to remember that. You know, sometimes the righteous today, we as Christians, we get overwhelmed with all of the wickedness going on. And, you know, there's no brethren in politics leading the nation, you know. There's no brethren among the world leaders when they meet, you know, at the UN. And we're kind of like, oh, you know, what do we do? How can we get any help with any of this? It's all wicked. The wicked people are running everything. But we need to gain comfort and consolation in that ultimately God will bring them to an end. And hopefully that'll give us some confidence and some assurance to keep living faithfully and keep trusting in God. Okay? Claudette, number 5. How does the Lord sit and what will He do to the world?
His throne is prepared for judgment and He will
administer
judgment and righteousness.
Right. He sits as a judge. And His throne is a throne of judgment. He is a king, mine in italics, but of course a king sits on a throne, but in particular sitting on a throne to judge. And He's going to minister judgment to the peoples. And that is done temporally in that He causes a nation to rise and He causes a nation to fall. And then of course it'll be in the judgment day. Let's not forget that not all judgment is reserved to the judgment day. There'll certainly be a lot of it there. But even now, 2014, God can raise nations, bring nations down. We learn from the book of Daniel and other places that God does that. So judgment can be even now and then ultimately in the judgment day. He's ministering judgment. Man may not. Crooked judges may not, but God is. David. Right. Verse 8, it's going to be in uprightness, fair, just, equitable, true, whatever words you want to put in with that. There's not going to be any crooked judgment, not any unjust judgment. And that's hard to find today. Okay, number 6, Brandon, what will the Lord be to the oppressed and what will the Lord do to those who trust in Him and seek Him? Right, this term high tower, it's a refuge, it's a stone fortress, like a castle, like a tower, and it's a symbol, it's a figurative symbol of a place to go for protection and refuge, defense. And I love verse 10, they that know thy name will put their trust in thee. Remember the Jeremiah passage, it's not the mighty one, it's not the noble one. Who is it? It's the one who knows the Lord. That's what's important. And so we need to know the name of the Lord. That, not His personal name, but know His character, His nature, and trust in Him. We need to teach our children to know the Lord. and of course through Bible study and so forth. So many people today just do not know the name of the Lord. It's a very beautiful verse there. Okay, so it's not just about him and his enemies. It's also, he sees oppressed. He sees the poor. He sees how they're being taken advantage of. The minor prophets especially rebuke Israel for these judges and nobles and princes and businessmen who take advantage of the poor and just walk all over them. It's terrible. The minor prophets bring that out a lot. So apparently in the nation of Israel, there were those who were just running roughshod over the poor and the oppressed. They're forgetting them. Verse 18, the needy shall not always be forgotten. Just, you know, just dismiss them and run roughshod over them and mistreat them. And so they have a place to run. They can go to God. Okay, Larry, number 7, what does the psalmist call upon his listeners to do and why? Yeah, these poor people and those who have been murdered, blood, verse 12, God's going to hold, God's going to remember them and hold the murderers accountable. Sing praise. When times are difficult, we're not going to sulk and be downhearted and quit and lose faith. We're going to sing. We're going to sing praises to the Lord. And in singing, we're going to declare among the people his doings. Singing teaches and admonishes. It tells others about the Lord. Okay? And so we find this in some of these psalms, that times are bad. There's enemies and adversaries. But what am I going to do? I'm going to go worship in God's house. I'm going to sing. I'm going to pray. I'm going to tell others about the Lord. And we need to keep doing that even today. He doesn't become so downhearted that, well, I'm just going to quit. No, we're going to sing and we're going to declare. And notice in verse 12, why? Why this is important. For, here's your why. For, my version says, he maketh inquisition for blood. That's an interesting translation. Some of the other translations read a little bit differently. But the idea is, one version says, he takes revenge against murderers. The idea is that when people go out and shed blood, the Lord is going to make inquisition for that. He's going to investigate that. He's going to judge that. He's going to examine that. And he's going to hold them accountable. What did he do with Cain? What did he do with Cain? Genesis 4, verse 10. Where's your brother? Your brother's blood cries out from the ground, and I'm going to put a mark on you. I'm going to hold you accountable for that. Genesis 9, verse 5, that if you shed blood by man, your blood will be shed. Capital punishment. So he is an avenger. You think about all the thousands and the millions of aborted babies, manslaughter, first-degree murder, all this kind of thing, people shedding blood. He is going to come and hold all of those people, all those, one version says, murderers. He's going to take revenge against the murderers. And, you know, man might turn a blind eye. And even our judicial system that tries to have some teeth in the law with murderers, even sometimes they fall short. Maybe they don't know if he actually did it or not. God is going to make sure that they're held accountable. He's going to remember. And all of these babies that are aborted, nobody remembers them. Do you remember all the babies that were aborted the first year that we had that law in 1973? Do we remember all them? We got a list of them somewhere. They're just gone to history, you know. God remembers all of that, and he's going to hold every one of those accountable. That's impressive. And then all the way down through time, from the killing of Abel all the way to the end of time. It's pretty impressive. Number 8, Matthew, what does the psalmist request of the Lord, and what is his motive for doing so?
Gracious,
Right. Have mercy upon me. He wants to be helped in his affliction. But notice why. It's not just some selfish thing. Verse 14, so that I can go out and show forth thy praise. So we need to think about that ourselves. When we're the recipients of God's mercy and grace and help, whether it's from sin or something else, we need to turn right around and go out and show God to others. We've just been saved. We've just been helped. Go out and tell somebody else about that. Don't just keep that in. Okay, number 9, Ken, what will happen to the wicked nations? Yes, where did we read about this before, that the sinners and the wicked people, they go out and do something and it comes back on their own head? Where did we read about that recently?
The last song, it said, they fall in the pit, they
hope. Yeah, where is that? 7? Look at 7, 15, and 16. We just looked at this very principle in 7, 15, and 16. He digs a pit, he falls into it. Mischief returns upon his own head. And so this principle is repeated. And we need to remember that when it looks like all these wicked people today in the news and all that, they're looks like they're getting by scot-free. Actually, what's not reported is it comes back on their own head. So God is going to execute judgment. The wicked is snared in the work of his own hands, you see. And so what's going to happen to the wicked? Whatever they're doing is going to come back and bite them, we might say. Go ahead.
You mentioned that. You said we don't notice that, but if you look back through history, you see that happen. I think all the wicked, Bible times, the wicked, they were, something happened to them.
Right.
And I think of maybe like Adolf Hitler. I mean, he didn't get away with the stuff he did. It came back on him eventually.
Right.
Somehow it works out.
Right. And he shoots himself in his bunker after he had shot so many other people. Look at the end of verse 16. The Higgaion. This is probably a music notation, also in Psalm 92, verse 3. It might mean something equivalent to largo or slowing down. So at the end of verse 16, they're singing this psalm. Slow down for a pause and wait, and then sing the last four verses there. Something along those lines. That's a new term that we're introduced to, in addition to sela or sela, which means to pause, most likely. Okay? Okay, number 10. Where will the wicked go? Andrea?
The wicked shall return to Sheol.
Right, the Sheol, the grave. They're going to be judged and go to the grave. 11, Anna, what will happen to those who are needy and poor?
They will not always be forgotten, and nor will their hope perish forever.
Right. Man forgets them, man dismisses them, man runs roughshod over them, but God will not do that. And so the psalmist, if it is David, he's not only caring about himself, but he cares about the poor. He wants to include the poor in the Psalms. He wants to include the poor in his prayers to God and God's help for them. And that's a good attitude. Okay, number 12. Dave, what things does the psalmist request the Lord to do to the nations?
He wants the Lord to arise and do not let the wicked prevail, let the nations be judged in your sight. Put them in fear.
Right. And as we study the Psalms, especially the men who are leading prayers, one thing that we can do is try to incorporate some of this language into our prayers. I think that's a very good thing. And one thing that comes to my mind is, let not man prevail, Lord. You know, we're surrounded by all of this foolishness and sin and wickedness, but just let not man prevail. Let your will be done ultimately. And that last statement is just amazing. The problem in the world today is that men forget that they're men. They think they're God. But we need to remember every day that we're men. That's all we are. But when we become gods, then we run the show and we make all the laws and we live any way we want. And so that last statement is a beautiful statement. Every day we get up, we need to know that we are the creature, small c, not the creator, large c. We're just men. Now, in the applications for today, who was a man in the New Testament that lost sight of that for a few moments and now he's eaten with worms? Herod. They chanted, "The voice of a God!" And he didn't do much to stop that. And he's eaten with worms. And here's the problem. We get power and money and these military leaders, and we can shoot bombs and kill innocent out of the sky over Russia, and we can do whatever we want. We're God. And we need to remember that we're just men. And there is one God, and it's not us. It's a beautiful principle and statement and sermon there right at the very end. And I like that. If Selah means pause, look at it right at the end of that statement. Let the nations know themselves to be but men, and then you just pause and think about that. That's good. Okay. Under the applications, we have just a few minutes. Mandy, number one. What did Jesus say about serving God? Matthew 22, 37. Right. This is an application from verse 1. I'm going to give thanks with my whole heart. Put all of your heart into it. Don't be half-hearted when we come to worship God. Or even during the week. Don't be half-hearted. Put your all into it. And Jesus said we serve God with all of our heart. Okay, it's the half-hearted, lukewarm approach that eventually causes us just to quit and leave or maybe go off into some denomination or something. Wholehearted service. Number two, Pat, who will judge the world at the end of time? Right. It's going to be just and righteous and without respect of persons. And Christ will be on the judgment seat, Acts 17, 31. So he will judge the world in righteousness, verse 8. And he's going to do that at the end of the world. Scott, number three, what did the author of Hebrews write concerning this idea of putting your trust in God? Number three. Okay, Patty? Yeah, he's not going to leave us or forsake us. And so, verse 10, Jehovah has not forsaken them that seek thee. And the Lord's not going to forsake us. Hebrews 13, 5 and 6, no matter how bad it gets. Shannon, number 4, what did Paul write concerning the poor? Right, remember the poor. The Lord remembers the poor, and one way he does that is through us, through our ministry, through our service. Let's not be the priest and the Levite who walk by on the other side. Let's be the good Samaritan. Okay, Sherry, number 5. What does Peter say about how the Lord helps us and saves us? Right. The psalmist says, have mercy upon me that I might show forth thy praise. And Peter says that we are a spiritual house, we're a royal priesthood, that we might show the excellencies of him who called us. It's the same thing. We're saved so that we might go out in our work, community, and show forth the excellencies of God. We don't keep it in. We don't just hide it. We go show it in our words, in our deeds, in our actions. Hey, Eric, number 6, what did Paul write about reaping what you sow?
Do not be deceived, God is not mocked, for whatever a man sows, he shall also reap. For he who sows to his flesh will of the flesh reap corruption, but he who sows to the Spirit will of the Spirit reap everlasting life.
Right. Joyce, what will God do to those who refuse to know him? Romans 1:28.
Give them over to a debased mind.
They refused to have God in their mind, Paul said. And so God gave them over. If you want to live that way, that's your business. I'm just going to give you over to all the debased, depraved lifestyle that you want. I'm not going to force you to live right. You want that? I'm going to give it to you. And it said they refused to have God in their knowledge. And the psalmist says in verse 17 that the nations forget God. And when somebody, well, I don't want to have God in my mind, then God's going to turn you over to that depraved life. And we looked at number 8 there. Mike, what did Herod experience regarding this matter of letting people praise him as God? What happened to him? Yeah, that's got to feel good. Let's sing Psalm 9 before we close. This tune may be a little new to some of you, but it's not hard to learn. God is judge of all the world. Let's sing about some of these sentiments before we close this evening. Let's all sing together. I now will give wholehearted thanks to the Lord and all of your marvelous works will record. In you will be glad and exultantly cry, and praise to your name will I sing, O Most High. When backward my foes were all turned in despair, they stumbled and perished because you were there. For you have defended my judgment and cause. You sat in just judgment, upholding your laws. You chided the nations the wicked destroyed. Their names you erased and forever made void. The foe is consumed, is completely erased. Their cities destroyed and their memory effaced. The Lord will eternally sit on his throne, establishing it for his judgment alone. In righteousness he'll judge the world from his seat, and unto all people shall equity meet. The Lord is a stronghold, a lofty strong tower. For all the oppressed in their troubled dark hour, those knowing your name, Lord, trust you for your grace. You have not forsaken those seeking your face.